to Dayanoff, Mike, the good news, we have a vaccine. The bad news, we're still months away from it getting to the masses. Until then, the economy will continue to struggle, and that includes mass transit. We take a lonely ride on the South Shore train with one of the few remaining riders. And saying goodbye to a 100-plus euro community newspaper in Porter County. And whose water tastes better, Chicago's or Hammond's? Well, it's up to Joliet, Illinois to decide. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Since the pandemic hit, thousands of commuters in Northwest Indiana and Chicago stopped taking the trains and buses to get to work, but some are still using it. People like Pat Scott. Scott takes the South Shore train to get to her job in downtown Chicago about once a week. I recently joined Scott on one of her weekly commutes to get a sense of how it feels to be among the few passengers on the train. I boarded the train in East Chicago and took it to Millennium Station.
Pat Scott.
And Pat, where are you from?
Chesterton, Indiana.
All right. And how often do you take the train?
Right now, once a week. And when the pandemic first started, I was up to about three times a week.
So what do you do downtown?
I'm a legal assistant for a law firm.
All right. And you said, too, right now that you go about once a week to downtown?
Right now, because of all the restrictions in the loop, our law firm has had the staff rotate that one person or people will come in at least once a week. If work demands, maybe two, but then you have to make sure that the person next to you is not there. Social distancing.
And before this happened, you used to take the train every day?
Every single day. Every single day. I've been riding since about 1997.
And usually this train is pretty packed.
Very packed. You've got three people sitting next to each other, two people, people standing absolutely on top of each other.
And then like in those early months, could you see it start to dwindle every week?
Pretty much right at the very beginning. It was a ghost town. And then the ridership picked up. They had the no mask car. Then they revoked that. Then the ridership dropped again. And now you don't see it so much in this car, but the other cars are actually marked every other seat you cannot sit in.
Oh, right. And why do you think they implemented a no mask car?
Well, that's a great question. I'm thinking that maybe because the numbers weren't as high, that maybe the fear of COVID wasn't that great, that people were really kind of refusing to wear a mask. So instead of having any confrontation, we'll give you one car, and if you choose not to wear a mask, there you go.
And do you feel any apprehension? I mean, you're coming from Indiana, you're going to Chicago. Any apprehension doing that?
You know, you got to worry about yourself. And if I take precautions to protect myself, I'm confident that I'll be okay. I do see people that get on the train that they don't wear the mask properly, and I can't worry about them. I got to worry about myself.
Let me ask you this. Has the South Shore continued to be sort of that lifeline for you to get to downtown?
Yes, definitely. It's less expensive than driving, so that's a plus. However, what they've been doing, if you buy a monthly pass, you can use the pass for 2 months. Well, when I bought my monthly pass in November, which is about $250 for me, we went to the one day a week. So now I've ridden the train 10 times on a $250 pass, but they are accepting it through December. So they've been taking the monthly passes for 2 months, but it's still cheaper than driving.
You're trying to use it as much as possible.
Exactly.
What do you think it's going to take for people to start to come back and use a train and go downtown? I mean, we're starting to get that vaccine, but we're still such at the early stages of everything.
Oh, that's a great question. The number one thing are the restrictions downtown. They have to be lifted. Once that is lifted, you will see tourists going back downtown. I saw that in the spring and the summertime. People were coming down just to walk around in the parks. So it's going to be a combination of offices opening again and restrictions being lifted in the loop.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, in any normal time, you go downtown, you have lunch, you could either, I don't know if you take your own lunch or go down to a restaurant. Is there anything open now to where you can go eat?
No. Sit-down restaurants pretty much are closed. However, there are a few that you can order ahead and either have it delivered or you can walk in and pick it up. It's become a ghost town.
Did you ever think it could get this way?
Never. Never. It's sad. You wonder if it's ever going to get back to the hustle and bustle of the loop.
And what is your family say in terms of you continuing to come down, even if it's like once a week?
My friends at the very beginning were very cautious, the 6 foot stay away from me kind of a thing, but then realized that precautions were being taken by me, and all I keep getting is be careful.
Do they look at you differently in Chicago because you're coming from a hot, I mean, we're going into a hot spot either way, yeah. But you're coming from a hot spot. The governor of Indiana just described Indiana yesterday as being on fire with COVID. That doesn't got to make you feel good.
Chicago being a hot spot, I don't look at it that way. I know it is, do not get me wrong, but you get off the train, you go to the office, you stay safe at the office, you get back to the train, and you go home. You don't divert from that path at all. And you just be careful, you be safe.
I got to think before all this hit, you would probably take your time getting to that train. I've taken the train a lot to downtown, and I would always say, I got to get that 8:30 train or that 9 o'clock train. The last train, I think, is at 11 or 11:30. After that, you're pretty much stuck for the rest of the night.
There are a couple times that I've missed the train like by 2 minutes. And the next train, just like you said, is like an hour and a half later. You got to take a Lyft or an Uber. Right. And I've done it twice since the pandemic.
Wow.
Just to get home.
So right now you say there's a lot of restrictions downtown in terms of just allowing people back to work downtown?
Not really. Our office building is empty, pretty much. I don't see anybody in the lobbies when I go up in the elevator or I come down. A lot of companies are totally work from home, but essential businesses like a law firm, they're always going to have somebody on site and at least one attorney on site.
So what are some of the things you have to be in the office for that you can't just be 100% from home?
Well, the reason why we rotate is for exactly that reason. There are documents that have to be FedExed out. There are checks that have to be mailed, bills that have to get out. Right now, the big thing in the very beginning was estates, wills and trusts. Some of our clients have passed on. We have to get those documents out to the courts and get them filed. What was the other thing? Oh, when the small businesses were going for grants and financial assistance, people were looking for their corporate records. So those are things you have to have hands-on.
And in terms of COVID itself, have you had anybody close to you, friends or family, who have gotten it or, you know, gotten sick from it?
It's ironic you should ask that. I do have a cousin who is now in week 4 in the hospital with COVID.
In Northwest Indiana?
No, he's in a Chicago suburb. As far as Northwest Indiana, no. No personal friends or acquaintances.
You know, a lot of people were, it was like kind of slow to kind of accept everything with COVID and everything. Did you see that on the train where people were slow to adhere to some of the rules and mask wearing?
I have to chuckle because it's happening now. People are not properly wearing their masks, and as the conductors will ask them or just tap their nose to say bring your mask up, I have seen a gentleman put his mask up in front of the conductor, and as soon as the conductor walked by, he pulled it back down again. I hate to say it, but it's mostly men. they just don't get it.
They don't care for it.
They don't care. They're infallible. It's not going to happen to me.
Yeah, so how much more of this? We're in December now, and do you have a prediction as to when this might start to lift?
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. You hope maybe by next summer, because by the time the vaccine comes out and everybody gets inoculated, I'm just hoping at least by mid-2021. That's just a prayer and a hope.
Pat, you look really relaxed, though. At least I'm sure in the other times you would have to probably go to the law firm dressed up pretty nice. Not that you're not nice, but you look like you're at a comfortable jaunt to the museum or something.
Well, they have lifted the dress code. Totally lifted it. And it has been brought to our attention that as soon as the office gets back to 100%, it's back to business attire. So right now, it's sneakers, jeans, sweatshirts, whatever it takes to get you in the office.
And does it make it easier in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no thinking. You just put on the comfortable jeans and a nice top, and you're out the door with your sneakers. The one thing that I am seeing, you know, people are social distancing on the train and even when they get off the train. But as soon as you get on the platform and through the train station, social distancing is out the window. It's like a cattle drive. Everybody is just trying to get to work, and it's kind of funny. You know, everybody's so safe, but boy, everybody wants to get out.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we're talking about it and everything, but normally you'd be on your train and on your phone or reading something, and you get to downtown. Do you feel like you're relatively safe in not getting it, or do you still feel like apprehensive even coming downtown, even for once a week?
I feel safe. Again, I do see people who aren't protecting themselves. So again, I keep repeating this, you've got to take care of yourself. And if I wear my mask and social distance from them, I feel safe. It's being smart is what it is.
Have you had to drive at all into downtown?
At the very beginning, because nobody really knew the extent or the severity of COVID. And the firm had us drive in, and they paid for our parking and our mileage and even bought our lunch for about 3 months. There was a skeleton crew of people who volunteered to come in and work. And we did that probably through June, I believe. Yeah, probably around June. And then we had the whole staff come in, again, rotating days. So the person that you sat next to wasn't there. And now, because of the restrictions that were just implemented back around Thanksgiving, we are down to a 5-day rotation, 1 day a week.
When this all started, did you think by December we would pretty much be back to normal?
Yes, I really did, because when we're talking about this, the 1st of March in April, my neighbor's a school bus driver. And when they said, oh, the kids won't be back until September or October, I just thought, give it a month or two and everybody, this will be all back to normal. And then now here it's December going on Christmas and our numbers in Indiana are through the roof. I would have never believed it. I still don't believe it. The concern I have sometimes is on the train, I don't know if you've been listening, but they really don't state mask up. Wear your mask, wear it properly. It's a state law. I think maybe if that was repeated a little bit more, that would be nice. They do have hand sanitizer on the train. That's a plus. And they do have restrooms because it is a long ride. But sometimes the hand dryers don't work. And I wish they would just kind of maybe...
The little things
add up to a little bit more protection. So you bring your... I keep looking at my bag because I bring my own hand wipes on the train to wipe something down, to wipe my hands. Because you don't know who sat there last. And these trains, I don't know if they get cleaned between stops.
They're supposed to, but...
They may be. I don't not know. But again, You're the one who has to take the steps to be safe.
You got to protect yourself.
Exactly. Oh, one thing, Leslie and I, we ride quite often. We noticed in Chesterton today at the train parking lots. That's how you can tell the ridership, pretty much. Chesterton today at Doom Park, that front parking lot had more cars than normal, let's say. We haven't seen that many cars in a long time. But then when you come back, let's say you take the 528 from downtown and you get down back in Dune Park at 7, it's a ghost town. Cars are gone. East Chicago, where you got on today, that was light. Miller was light. Gary was light. So we're just trying to figure out why Chesterton. But then you've got a lot of Illinois people having homes in Michigan, Long Beach, Beverly Shores. They're taking the train to get into Chicago.
And they're just parking there.
It's easier, especially when they're coming up from Michigan or down from Michigan. And then they take the train in. But those are the early trains. We're talking about the 5:57 maybe, the 6 o'clock, 6:40. And then they get off and they take the 3:47 and they're home in an hour.
Let me ask you this too. In the early days too, when you were driving in a little bit, and when did you start taking the train again?
They did that for 3 months, so that was March, April, May, probably May, just around Memorial Day. That's when they said, okay, the numbers are good, the loop is opening up, so you can start taking the train again, when the restrictions were lifted the first time.
And did it take some self-convincing that it would be safe for you?
A little bit. But not so much.
So what are your, if you're somebody who is apprehensive of taking the train again to go to work, what would you tell them to get them back on?
First of all, it's safe. And I keep saying over and over again, it's up to you to be safe. So if you wear your mask, wear it properly, social distance, you're going to be fine. Absolutely fine.
And that was Pat Scott of Chesterton, Indiana, talking to her about her weekly trip to downtown Chicago for work. When we come back, a discussion with the head of the South Shore Trains, Michael Nolan. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. In our previous segment, we heard from a longtime passenger of the South Shore train. Like many transit agencies, the South Shore train has been dealing with a huge loss of ridership since the start of the pandemic. In Chicago, for example, Metra is down 90% of its regular ridership, and they're counting on additional federal stimulus to avoid any cuts. Same is true for the CTA and PACE. But what about the South Shore trains? I recently spoke to Michael Nolan, president and general manager of the Northern Indiana Commuter Transportation District, the operators of the South Shore trains. My first question is, how has the pandemic impacted the train service?
When the stay-at-home order first was implemented back in March and April of 2020, we were down probably 95%. So we were running about 5% of normal. When the state opened back up in the summer, we've gradually increased. We got up to about 20% of normal ridership, not anything that you're going to sustain any kind of service for a long period of time, but we've been at about 20% until the mayor of the city of Chicago added Indiana to, I'll call it, the no-fly order state. If you come in from Indiana, there's a 14-day quarantine period, other than for essential purposes, and there's a fairly long list of things that qualify: healthcare workers, first responders, going in for medical appointments, and that's a lot of our ridership. So while we were running about 20%, we're probably running between 17 and 18% today. Still not where we need to be, but much better than 5%.
What are you thinking in terms of federal funding for next year? We know that so far Congress hasn't approved anything. Are you hoping that once the new president comes in, Congress will sort of sit down and try to iron out some more additional funding for transit, including the South Shore?
Well, first of all, we're grateful for the funding we've already received under the CARES Act. We received $73 million in the first or second quarter of 2020. Our financial house has always been in good order, and we were grateful to have it. But you know, that money will run out. With running at about 18% of ridership, we're losing millions of dollars in lost fare box revenue. Also, some of the other funding we receive from the state is also stressed because of the impact on the economy. So we're supportive, very supportive of additional funding, hopeful that it will come support the efforts from our industry to encourage Congress to continue to keep transit in their plans when they talk about future funding. Again, remember, as I said, we're transporting a tremendous amount of first responders and healthcare workers to the hospital systems in Chicago. That's what we found when we got down to, you know, who was riding our service during the lockdown order or during this quarantine period. There's a lot of people who depend upon our service, and they're key people to support society.
And is there like a during this past year or during the pandemic, have you had to alter your schedule at all?
We altered our schedule back during the stay at home order when the pandemic first became a reality for everyone, and so we went to a modified weekend service. We didn't know the impact we would have on our crews, how many of them might be quarantined, whether or either had COVID or being quarantined from it. So we significantly reduced service. Back in June, we went back to our full schedule. We're running our full schedule now. I will say we are looking at contingency plans to modify that schedule if more of our employees, and we've seen an uptick in the impact over the last couple of months, especially from impacts to our employees, whether employees who have COVID or loved ones or family members have been exposed to COVID. So we've got to monitor that to make sure we've got enough staff to run service.
Is there a time like for next year coming up that you're hoping to, if Congress was to approve a additional federal assistance, when does that have to get to NCD before perhaps you need to make some funding cuts?
I think we're going to be fine through 2021. So I'm not going to sit here, Mike, and tell you that we need it by and we're in a much more we're in a stronger position than some of our transit friends in the industry. And so we'll get through 2021, but if this continues, this kind of trend continues, we can't sustain this, even with the $73 million we received from Congress. So we're monitoring and we're being very cautious with our finances. We're continuing to run full service. One of the reasons we do it, Mike, is because running longer trains allows our riders that are using the system to socially distance. We could run a two-car train with 130 people on it, but that means everybody's going to be within that 6-foot zone. So by running a 4 or 6 car train when you only have to run two, that's allowing us, those who ride our system, to socially distance. So we're looking at everything we can do to promote safety, both for our employees and our riders. And I don't know if you followed, we're doing a tremendous amount of additional sanitization. We hired 10 new employees to help us clean the trains. Our trains have never been cleaner. We're using ultraviolet lights. We've got fogging systems. We use electrostatic sprayers. The type of chemical we use is not just a one-touch chemical. It lasts for 24 hours. We've purchased high-powered steam cleaners. These cars are cleaner than they've ever been. And frankly, when we emerge from COVID, transit, hospitals, airlines, major public accommodations, we've learned a hell of a lot about sanitization. So it's going to bode well for the ordinary flu that's passed around, where it's going to be a safer environment when we finally get through COVID and there's a vaccine. It's widely available.
Let me ask you, Mike, does it cost more money? Like when you say you could probably just run two trains you know, because such few passengers. But does it cost more to add additional trains to that?
Sure. The larger, you know, the more train cars we have, the more crew we're going to put on to make sure we can run it safely. So that's certainly an element. If we ran fewer trains, you know, theoretically, we could have a layoff or a cutback in service. That's not something we're looking to do. And in the short run, you could save some money. In the long run, we've got a great workforce, and it takes a while to train this workforce. So if you let qualified, skilled people go, you save a few dollars in the short run. But when things turn back around and you need people, they're not available. And you got to go back out and retrain them. And hopefully you can do it in time. That's a risk that we don't need to take right now. We're going to keep our workforce.
And right now there's really no way. I mean, I don't know how much marketing you guys still do right now, but it's because of these travel restrictions. It's hard to just say, take the train, go walk downtown, because Chicago they don't want people from Indiana doing that right now.
Yeah. You know, and that's exactly right, Mike. We're not promoting discretionary travel to Chicago. What we are promoting is all the steps that we are taking to make this railroad safe, so that when the time comes when you can go back to go to Chicago, to go to a ball game or a restaurant or a museum or the park, that you'll know that the ride is safe, that we have taken steps to make sure that the travel to and from Chicago is as safe as it's never been safer, frankly. So we want people to know we're positioned to take you there when the time is right.
Mike, I was on your train on Friday, as you know, to interview a commuter. One commuter who's been taking the train once a week and has been doing it for years, well, actually, she used to take it every day until this pandemic, says that maybe NCTA can do a better job in announcing or promoting the use of masks and wearing it right. How often do you guys have conductors just announcing you need to wear your mask on the train?
We have a strict mask policy, and that's evolved. You know, in the beginning, there was no enforcement provision. And so we require employees to wear masks. We required our riders to wear masks, but there was no enforcement mechanism to deal with a rider who was just not cooperative. That changed here in Indiana about a month and a half ago, where there is strict enforcement. And the moment that changed, we went to a 100% compliance requirement. Now, you're right. I was in the grocery store with my wife last night with our masks up over our noses. And, you know, you walk around the store and you'll see some people who all of a sudden that mask slips below the nose. And your first thought is that doesn't do anybody any good. So we require the masks. We encourage people to wear them safely. If our conductor sees somebody who's not wearing a mask, they're going to tell them they've got to wear the mask. And if they refuse, we'll remove them from the train. We haven't had that issue, but I'm sure we have times, and you and I both see it, where people are wearing them and they slip down and then they pull them back up. And it's a never ending issue. I understand that.
Mike, I know, sometime at this year, you got a little feedback from having this mask optional train service.
Yeah.
Did that benefit at all? I mean, did you see an uptick in people taking the train because maybe on this particular car you didn't need to wear a mask?
I don't think we were grabbing riders who were going to ride the system because they knew they didn't have to wear the mask. We did it because there was no enforcement mechanism, and we would have individuals. And like I said, we've got doctors, nurses, techs who are going in to serve and to treat the most vulnerable people. And when we didn't have a mechanism to remove them, they would be wearing their masks, but then they'd be sitting next to somebody who was refusing. And then that was problematic. And we heard a lot of complaints for it. So we came up with a hybrid solution, which was, look, if we have a 6-car train, we'll designate one car as a mask car, where if you're going to refuse to wear the mask, that's where you go. And the rest of the cars were 100% strict compliance. That we could enforce. And what we heard from our riders, especially the ones who depend upon whether they're compromised immune systems themselves or they're going in to treat people, they really appreciated the fact that we had 100% strict compliance cars, and those people who weren't going to wear the mask were going to another car. And we got pushback for it. They call, you know, I understand that it wasn't perfect, but the notion that those people who weren't wearing the masks in our train were going to come go to Chicago and suddenly they get to Chicago and they'd be not perfect citizens and wear masks. That was also, you know, not reality. We didn't pick up non-mask wearing people because they could ride our train and refuse to wear the mask.
All right, Mike. One last question. I know Nick D is planning full speed ahead with the double track program and the expansion to Munster Dyer. But could, you know, the issue with the pandemic, do you see this at all impacting Nick D into the future with just, you know, some people are saying maybe we don't return fully back to normal for another year or two, just until we get those vaccinations up, people feeling comfortable. Do you feel that this situation still potentially can impact future growth of Nick D?
Actually, I think we're probably in the best position. We're going to be positioned to come out of this better than we could have been without these capital projects. These capital projects, double track won't be ready for revenue service until summer of 23, and Westlake won't be ready until spring of 25. So we should be well past, if we're not, we're all in trouble, but we should be well past this COVID situation. And at that point in time, our service, our operation will be better than it's ever been before. So we'll be incredibly well positioned to serve that post COVID-19 market with new service, better improved service, more frequent service, more on time service. We're probably better than we would have been positioned had we not been making these capital improvements.
So heading into 2021. You feel that Nick D is in a good place right now, but certainly some additional federal funding would always be welcome.
It definitely would be welcome. When you say we're in a good position, we're not in a position where we need to cut back tomorrow, Mike. We do need, like everyone else in the society, we need a solution to COVID-19. It's impacting the safety of our employees, our families, our entire stakeholders in the country. We need to get that resolved, and we need to get back to pre-COVID society for everyone's sake. So we're not, I wouldn't say we're in good, I mean, we're a strong financial position. We need things to come back. We're projecting that in 2021, in the second quarter or so, we'll start to see a significant uptick in ridership. And we're hoping by the end of the year, we're back to pre-COVID levels.
Okay, Mike, but you're not ready to do any service reductions.
We're not, as I sit here right now, we're not having to make that decision that we need to curtail service or start layoffs, no.
Well, Michael Nolan is president and general manager of the South Shore Train Line, and we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Layoffs or job losses are a common topic these days in the newspapers. Seems like every day you're reading another article about retail stores or restaurants that are closing. But soon you may not even hear that, not because it's not happening, but the publication that's reporting it may no longer be around to inform you. The pandemic has hit the news industry hard. In the first half of the year alone, some 11,000 layoffs in media, according to data from Challenger Gray & Christmas, an outplacement and career transition firm based in Chicago. Big media, such as ESPN, haven't been spared of layoffs, or big newspapers, but the smaller ones aren't being spared either. This week, the 137-year-old Chesterton Tribune announced it would cease publication on December 30th. That means the small community newspaper won't be there to cover Chesterton and the other little towns around it. Joining me to talk about the closure is longtime Chesterton Tribune reporter Kevin Nevers. Kevin, I'm so sorry to hear about the Chesterton Tribune going to be closing up on December 30th. Kevin, how long have you been there?
I've been there since July of 1997, almost 23 and a half years.
And how big is the paper? Do you know how many employees or writers you guys have?
Well, there's the drivers who have some kind of contract deal, I think. I think we call them contractors. But as of today, let's say as of tomorrow, there'll be four full-time employees. It used to be a lot more. You know, when I started, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe 9 full-time employees. Something like that. Nine or 10.
That was pretty big for a community newspaper.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I started, every Friday we'd run a two-page newspaper. There was 12 pages plus a four-page insert for the church pages, all right? So, and 12-page editions, daily editions, were frequent. There hasn't been, I guess maybe we ran a 12-pager for Thanksgiving. I don't remember. But it's been 8 pages day after day after day for a long, long time, right? Things started getting – we never fully recovered from the 2008 recession. I can say that. Ad revenues have dropped. Subscribers over time have dropped. You know, it's like the newspaper business in general. All right, you know, the internet, the multiplication and diversification of news sources has made, and you've thought about this yourself, has made print newspapers, you know, dinosaurs, really. And as far as the Chesterton Tribune is concerned, the pandemic was the asteroid that knocked out this dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me ask you that. What made, with so many news sources out there, what made the Chesterton Tribune stand out? What made it special?
Well, I think it, because it's hyper-local, you know. There's AP stuff, all right, for, you know, nation, world, state, but the bread and butter was always Doonland. You know, the four townships which comprise the Doonland School Corporation. And we didn't stray too far outside of topics, issues, stories, outside of Doonland. We would now and then. I mean, I covered a murder trial that happened elsewhere, you know, that the murder happened elsewhere. The victim wasn't local. The murder wasn't local. But generally speaking, we kept our stories local. And by doing that, we could sort of flood our readers with the news that they needed to know about, you know, what was going on in their town, community events, politics, municipal news, subdivisions, planned unit developments, you know, Board of Zoning Appeals. It can be pretty dry, all right? But a lot of the time, the issues were of great concern to particular neighborhoods, particular subdivisions, and sometimes to everybody in town. And I think, you know, the paper has been around for 136 years. It's a tradition in a lot of homes. I think one thing that, well, a lot of people have moved here over the last 20 years from Illinois, from Lake County, and my personal feeling is that when they moved to Chesterton or when they moved to Porter or Burns Harbor, they never really thought of it as moving to Chesterton. I think they thought of it as moving to the Doolin School Corporation. And I think they didn't have the tradition of the Chesterton Tribune. They may never have seen the value of the Chesterton Tribune. I remember once I was at a park board meeting, and the issue was the park department going to sell a piece of property on which it had originally planned to put a pocket park? And the neighbors were furious, and they said, well, how come we didn't know about this? How can you just come in and do this without letting us know? And, you know, I went up to the guy after a meeting. I said, dude, we've had this in our paper. I said, well, I don't take the Chesterton Tribune. I said, well, okay, you know, that's...
There you go.
That's unfortunate, yeah. So I think that despite the growth in population of Chesterton and Burns Harbor, not so much Porter, that didn't really help us, all right? It's counterintuitive, but I don't believe that it helped us. But, you know, the people who've been taking the paper for years, the people who've been taking the paper, families taking it for generations, I think that's a tradition. It's a habit. It's, you know, it's the first thing they do when they get home from work. They open up the Trib and see what's going on. And, you know, I don't know how many people ever read it cover to cover. You look at the, I watch my wife read the paper. And, you know, she's not at it for 30 minutes. She's at it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You know, there's things she's looking for. She scans the headlines. But I think it's been comforting for a lot of people to know that it was there, that the people who wrote for it, the people who edited it, live here, care about the issues, care about the community. It's a sad thing. It's a sad thing. And I don't really know what it's going to be like. I can't imagine what it's going to be like not having the paper.
The things that the folks in Chesterton are not going to know about, because you don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. And I'm writing a kind of a column for the last publication day, December 30th. And basically the gist of it is, you're going to have to take it into your own hands. You got to start attending meetings. You need to pay attention to what the towns post on their websites. You need to maybe not so much pay attention to social media, but get in your car or walk to the town hall and sit through a meeting and make that a habit. You know, I don't know if that's the sort of thing many people would be interested in doing, but, you know, it's otherwise, you have no idea. Now, you know, I've always found the represented, the elected and appointed officials in the three towns to be, to have great integrity, to have the best interests of the community in mind. That doesn't mean that a lot of times residents didn't, you know, deeply object to a particular policy decision or a particular vote. But I don't think this is a case where, with the reporters gone, being out of the public eye, that they're going to, you know, start.
And welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ. Our last segment pits the city of Chicago versus Hammond, Indiana. Who has the best tasting water? Why is that important? Because the city of Joliet's underground aquifers are running out of water and they need a new water supplier, and it's going to be either Chicago or Hammond. Both Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot and Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott Jr. traveled to Joliet last night to speak before the Joliet City Council.
We're so serious about the taste of our water that we even have our chemists include a smell test as they test our water every day to assure that nothing is amiss.
Have you ever had this drink before? Aquafina? Well, it's bottled in Munster, Indiana, and they don't even have an extra filter on it. And that is Hammond water, almost exactly, dumped right into the bottle. So if you ever had one of these, you've had our water. This is our product. This is what would be coming to Joliet.
To get a better sense of the issues involved, I spoke to Joliet Mayor Bob Odekirk. Let me ask you this. How did Joliet get into this situation with the water, needing water?
Well, we're in an aquifer that we've been using since 1907 that's running dry. So the city, and it's a regional problem. It's not just a Joliet issue. But the city is known about this. It's probably the 1970s. They were monitoring water levels. And back then, the plan was to go to the Kankakee River. It was never really, I guess, totally planned out or executed, but that was the thought. But as time went on, Joliet didn't move on this. Other cities have, like Aurora. They began making the switch in other cities throughout the region to get off of the aquifer. So right now, the best estimates are there's probably about 20 years of water left before there would be severe cutbacks or shortages. So we're a little bit behind the eight ball as far as how late we're moving on this. But about 3 years ago, I formed a committee, an environmental committee, or reformed it. It had been on the books, but it hadn't been being used. They tackled the water issue. They made recommendations to the council. Last year, the city council voted. They narrowed the options down to Lake Michigan. They kept two different options open, one to buy from the city of Chicago or one to run a line and draw water from Hammond. So in the last year, we've been negotiating with both the city of Chicago and Hammond. And what's going to happen tonight is that both of those municipalities are coming to Joliet City Council chambers. They're going to make their presentation to the council. And they're both really viable, good options. And the city's going to have to choose one of the two. Hopefully in January, we make the choice and begin moving forward.
Do you have a preferred option?
No, coming into it, I was kind of leaning in one direction, but I really want to, they both are solid options for Joliet. So it's going to come down, I think, to, what's presented tonight, what the actual numbers are, and what it's going to mean long-term for Joliet residents. I think we're on good footing here in Joliet, but going into it, it was important that we were going to do something that was going to be sustainable. And not 20 or 30 years, we'd be back at the table rethinking what we've done here in Joliet. And I think with either option, these are long-term 50-100-year options. It's going to be good for the people of Joliet. So I'm very comfortable with where we're at in the process. And it's going to be a tough choice between the two. They're both are viable, good options for Joliet.
But as of right now, Joliet isn't a situation where Joliet's going to run out of water tomorrow.
No, not tomorrow, but we know we're projecting this to be a 10-year program to get the pipeline built. We have to totally redo our water system in Joliet. We're going to keep the wells as a backup, but we're projecting to be a full 10 years till we can get the new system up and running and fully viable. So we don't have a lot of time to spare. We're on the right track, but we have to keep the pedal down on this.
Mayor, is the basic difference between the options Chicago would just provide you with treated water, or they would build a pipeline from Chicago to Joliet, and you'd be a customer over there, where the Hammond proposal would require you to build your own filtration plant, but then you can then resell that raw water, untreated water?
Yeah, we could do either with the Chicago option or the Hammond option. Either way, we're basically buying wholesale. We're going to pump the water either from Chicago or from the lake in Hammond back to Joliet. But you're right, the Chicago water option, the city of Chicago will treat the water. And we toured their facilities last week on the south side. It's really an amazing facility, what the city of Chicago does with their water. Or with Hammond, we would pump it, we would treat it, and get it out to Joliet. We anticipate, we've been talking about 14 or 15 different municipalities, and we anticipate we're going to have partners with this. I think they're waiting to see what we choose and then, of course, what it's going to cost, and then other municipalities are going to make that decision. But I think it's fairly certain that Joliet is going to be in a position where we are providing water to our neighbors and to other people in the southwest region of Chicago.
Can you tell if there's a difference in taste between Chicago water or Hoosier water?
No, I wouldn't offhand. I know, I lived in Chicago before, so I know you can drink right out of the tap in Chicago. I'm not sure that there'd be a significant difference. It's coming from the same lake, so I don't think that there's a difference, but I could be wrong. Maybe there is.
And the Joliet City Council will hear presentations tonight, but then we'll make a final decision. It's expected sometime in late January.
Yeah, obviously we have to crunch the numbers, but the other aspect of it, and one of the reasons why we're doing it this way, is it's going to affect obviously a lot of people, and we're definitely looking for community feedback and for people. Certainly want to be transparent with the process, but to have, again, Mayor Lightfoot or Mayor McDermott from Hammond come and make a presentation to City Council, it'll be on local TV, it'll be covered in the local media, and I think it's important that everyone see what we're doing and that it be a choice that, obviously the council is going to make, but we're going to make it with a lot of community feedback.
And that was the Mayor of Joliet, Bob Odekirk. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. I'd like to thank my producers and guests. You can hear this show as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. For me, Michael Puente, and everybody here at Off Mic and Lakeshore Public Radio, stay safe and stay warm.